Did you know that with seriously high computer and math skills, medical insights, and extreme motivation, experts are dedicating their talents to both understanding the mysteries of the human brain and at the same time solving some of the most crucial needs in clinical practice, such as Alzheimer's disease? Today, we're speaking with renowned neuroscientist Dr. Shachar Arzi on this episode of Hadassah On Call.
This is Hadassah On Call, New Frontiers in Medicine. In each episode, we go behind the headlines with the Hadassah Medical Organization and look at the work changing what's possible, helping you understand the medical breakthroughs impacting our lives. From neurological malfunction to sexual dysfunction, from striving for peace through medicine to operating room robots. This is Hadassah On Call. Here's Melanie Cole.
Welcome. My guest today is Dr. Shachar Arzi. He's the director of the Computational Neuropsychiatry Lab and Neuropsychiatry Clinic and the Epilepsy Center of the Hadassah Medical Organization in Jerusalem, Israel. Welcome to the show, Dr. Arzi. So what conditions are your main interest? What are you studying?
We are in the Computational Neuropsychiatry Lab, and what that we are interested mostly are high cognitive function, and specifically the new field, the nascent new field of the human self, what it is like to be a self and a self that behaves in the world. And it's a relatively new, like several years of research in the domain of spatial cognition and temporal cognition. And this gives rise to fundamental domains like memory or body. And for memory and body, we can go to the disorders of memory, and especially Alzheimer's disease, and also dissociative disorders that are suffering, or neuropsychiatric suffering that are related to the human body. So this is the framework of the lab in general.
So how did you begin exploring what's going on in the patient's brain using data from patients' own world taken from digital media, Facebook, smartphones? How did you begin to explore this? It's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's exactly the thing. And that's why I was a little bit confused with respect to the first question, because it's much easier to speak about memory. Like if somebody has memory problems, and then there is a function named memory, and yeah, this is a concept that is easy to perceive and to understand. However, we actually now know that things are much more than that. It's not that we say that we know everything, but we know that memory is just some sub-function of something that is much more broad than this, and this is like what that we call the self, or the behaving self, or the experience. Because memory is just a way to serve the experience of being alive, the experience of meeting people, the experience of going to different places, the experience of experiencing important events. This is especially important for all people. I think for all of us, but for all people, it's more prominent. Like that, people. What is the most important? Like we live from event to event, from birthday to birthday of grandchildren, from a bar mitzvah, chatunah, wedding, or a graduation of a great child from university. So these are the most important things in life. So what that we claim is that these are much more than just memory. You cannot compare it to memory tests, like when I ask you to remember three words. It's something that is very substantial. And this defines our life in a much better way than just call it memory. And then when we go to the world, let's say, of Alzheimer's disease, so we hypothesize that this is quite the same. It's not that people who suffer from Alzheimer's, or they just suffer from memory decline. Because if you have some memory problems, okay, you can write a note and compensate for it. It's something that is much more substantial. Like people that lose their way in their surrounding, or that they don't remember the most dearest person for them. So, and this is a huge suffering in Alzheimer's disease, and this is much more than just memory. Now, with respect to your question, so now old neuropsychology just used the pen and paper tests in order to examine all this. Just ask you to remember three words, and then I wait 1 minute and see if you remember them or not. But now here we speak about something that is much broader. And the question is how we as clinicians can get access to all of this. It's much easier to ask about three items, but about to ask you about your own life, I don't know anything about your own life. But now, in the recent years, with the huge amount of data that is available over social media and over the digital world, this thing is actually doable. We are not aware of it because we just use our smartphone, we just use our computers, but actually people in the world know everything about us. Like Google know everything about all of us who use Gmail, and Facebook know all of us if we use Facebook. And these things are available, and these things are also extractable with the permission of the patient. And then we can, with one click, can use our algorithms to go, our robots to go into the patient's digital world, and then create the world for either for our scientific research or for clinics. And then using this world, we can really test the patient on this world. And not only this, we can also create a virtual world for the patient in order to enhance and to augment his or her ability to use or to restore the relation to the most, these most important things in life, like close family members or important events in one's life.
Absolutely brilliant. So how can neuroimaging examinations of the brain, how does that enable this early detection if you're using the social media, which is so fascinating that you're able to take this information that people put out there themselves and use it to recreate somebody's memories and their life? So how can this neuroimaging, the MRIs and such that you're using, how can this help to improve the prognosis for people with Alzheimer's or even detect it early?
So in neuroimaging, we speak about structural neuroimaging and functional neuroimaging. Structural neuroimaging is the MRI that all of us know that shows the brain. But functional neuroimaging shows the function of the brain, how the brain functions, how the brain creates thoughts and memories and all of this cognitive and emotional stuff. And in the last 30 years, it becomes available to detect the function of a brain using functional MRI, which is a way to look for blood changes in the brain, which are correlated to the functions of the function of neurons. So we can see this almost in real time nowadays. And the old neuroimaging, functional neuroimaging, what that people did is to show generic stimulation, like how functional neuroimaging works. You show a patient or a subject with a stimulus, and then you see the reaction in the brain to this stimulus. But most of stimuli are generic, like if I want to detect the area in the brain that is responsive to face, I show faces of whom or whoever, just any face will evoke it, even a drawing of a face. But here we are looking not for some generic thing like to retain words or to identify faces, but we want to identify what we call mental orientation, the orientation of one to the world. And as I explained earlier, this orientation is different if I refer to my own beloved daughter, who is, for sure, as you know, the most brilliant, smart, and beautiful creature on Earth.
Of course.
And, Of course she is, yeah. And you would say the same for yours, and I would say, how come that the two take the same place? And then in other, we will also say the same. But you see, with all due respect to your daughter or granddaughter, for sure mine is more beautiful. Yeah? We don't doubt about it. So it will be what we presume if we show an image of a baby to everybody, all of us now, most of us like babies, and this will evoke a response. But it will be different if we show the dearest ones. But this is difficult, because if we can, how can we in clinical practice create such a thing? So we take all of this from from this social media and digital media, this stupid smartphones that we carry with us all over, and they are stuck in them, and they know everything about us. So we can just take all of this information out of it, then show it to the individual patient, and then see how this patient is oriented to his own world. And then when we see how you are oriented to your own world, we can offer you a precise medicine, not something generic that is good for everybody, but something that will tackle your own situation with your own difficulties and with respect to your own needs and this circles of family members and people that are important to you specifically. So this is the new era of precision medicine that is enabled by this data revolution and the computation revolution that we face nowadays.
Well, in this precision medicine, you're able to use human patients that you're working with to be able to compare their own self before and after whatever interventions you offer. So is that better than working with animals, because they can actually tell you the difference, yes?
Yeah, that's very wise what you just said. First of all, in my domain, I don't know about other domains, but in my domain of neuropsychiatry, animal models are very problematic, because, you know, I really love dogs, but I never saw a dog who came to me and said that I am the Messiah. However, I did see several people who said so. So, for example, this example of a delusion. So it's something that is very difficult to study in animal models. And the way that we overcame it is what did you just suggest? That is to do things longitudinally. And now all this is available, because we have all of this information. Now, my phone knows not only that I am now at Hadassah Medical Center in Jerusalem, but he knows that this morning I was at my home. He didn't forget it. And moreover, he can even predict that in 2 hours I will be teaching the computational neuropsychiatry course at Hebrew University. How smart this guy is. So we can use and compare things longitudinally, and then we can track not only the static state of the patient or of the disease, but the most important dynamics of the disease. And if we know the dynamics, we can predict what will be in the future of the disease, and then we can make our intervention much more precise and much more helpful.
And that's the whole point of this. So what's one key point you've learned in regards to Alzheimer's disease for medicational intervention?
In general, the world is so wide, so I don't like questions that said one thing. But if you ask me for one thing and you really understand, so I think that the most important thing is that we treat Alzheimer's far too late. It's like patients with a heart attack, and then if you come and do resuscitation 2 days after, and not in the first 5 minutes, so there is nothing to solve. And people are coming to us, to the doctors, when when things are already very, very deep into the disease. And then the drugs that are developed are not helpful. And if we want to cure Alzheimer's, we have to present drugs much, much earlier, like 10 or even 20 years before the time that people come now to us. And for this, we plan together with the Hadassah Medical Organization in New York and with the Alzheimer's Foundation of America, and we are working on it, to do a huge effort that we may call it Screening America, and like the people will go and undergo our mental orientation task that we were describing, and then we can run our machine learning algorithm on this huge amount of data, and then we can identify people at risk, and when people at risk can come early enough, so hopefully drugs may be much more effective than at the very time point when they finally present to the clinic.
We only have a few minutes left, Dr. Arzi, but how were your team's efforts able to translate some of this interesting research into usable clinical applications? Because as you mentioned, smartphones, and everybody's carrying them, these clinical apps are what people are looking to, especially those in your field. So how were you able to translate that? What are you doing with that?
So President Obama said once in one of his very many remarkable notes, he spoke to children, and they say, don't use smartphone, program them. We are facing, in the recent years, we are facing a tremendous change in the way that we are related to the world, and the same very way that the world relates to us. And this is composed from two things. One is the data revolution, that there's so much data on us, and it's stored in so many places, everything is known. And the second is a computational revolution, and this is especially related to the relatively new domain of machine learning and artificial intelligence. That by the combination of these two, of this huge data set, what people call big data, and algorithm together, we can extract knowledge about ourselves that even us and even the most genius expert could not extract or come with. And this combination enables it. Now, and this can be related to everything, but it's related, as you said, especially to one's life, because we carry all of these things, and what we do with our smartphones, we communicate with other people, so this is social, this is relation, and then we track our way. We use navigation aids, but we also we have this GPS that remember where we are all the time, and we plan our future, and we can come back to old memories by using cameras and stuff like that. So these are the three main components. So one today has to be a little bit of a Renaissance man in order to capture all of this, because you have to do cognition, like all of these things together. You have to do the computation. You have to do the algorithms. You have to relate to the data. And if you want to apply it into medicine, you have also to be a clinician. That's exactly what we do at Hadassah. This is the model of Hadassah, the combination of all these things together. And then we can just take the algorithms and direct them to take all of this information and to extract what it is relevant to the clinics. And we are finished the studies, and if we compare our performance the performance of our algorithms in identifying the very, very early stage of Alzheimer's disease, so our accuracy is 95% when the best expert, the best human expert, can go into a precision of only 71%.
Wow.
Which is really a huge, huge difference. So and that's where the world is going, and we at Hadassah and should lead it.
Wow, thank you so much, Dr. Arzi, for being on with us today in this absolutely fascinating segment. This is Hadassah On Call, New Frontiers in Medicine, brought to you by Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America. The largest Jewish women's organization in America, Hadassah enhances the health of people worldwide through medical education, care, and research innovations at the Hadassah Medical Organization. For more information on the latest advances in medicine, please visit Hadassah.org. And to hear more episodes in this podcast series, please visit Hadassah.org/podcasts. That's Hadassah.org/podcasts. I'm Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.